everybody. I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. I got to tell you something right off the bat about our next guest. And notice how I use the word bat. So there's a symbolism with that here. And we're getting ready for spring opening day with baseball. Let's see, I know that the Red Sox open up this week. And I say that because I think one of the coolest things is when you meet people that come on the podcast, you just never know, right? Baseball, we are a big family. Well, today's guest is not only a award-winning author, blogger, and podcaster. She's got her Yankees hat on, y'all. I mean, come on. And yes, you can see I've got my Red Sox hat on. Today's guest, like I said, is an award-winning author of the book, A Delightful Little Book on Aging, and then also author of Creatrix Rising, Unlocking the Power of Midlife Women. Guys, let's give it up today for Stephanie Raffalock. Stephanie, welcome to the show, Yankee fan.
Thank you so much. And I tip my Yankee hat to your Boston Red Sox hat.
It just goes to show that, like we were talking earlier, that we are one community.
Yep.
We have a sense of belonging with baseball, no matter the rivalry, no matter who wins the game. Because if I'm not mistaken, are we not playing each other this week?
I believe so.
I think we are.
I'm glad that we're meeting at this end of things.
I was going to say, there's a lot of serendipity here. Hey, you know what? I've got two baseballs here, right here. So we are good to go. I mean, it's all good. And I do appreciate you coming on today's show. We're going to talk about Creatrix in particular, as well as your books and some other things about women. And our podcast reaches over 96 countries. We've got a great female base, whether we're talking trans, gender related and identified by female, and across the world. So today's podcast is super important. And in addition to that, as I laugh, there's a lot of buzz right now about what is it about to be a woman, and why are women in the positions that they're at? Where do we struggle? How do we feel like we fit? Where don't we feel like we fit? Before we get into some of those questions, share with us a little bit about who Stephanie is.
Well, writing for me, writing and public speaking is an encore career. I just turned 70 years old. I have a mission in life to uplift women and help them to embrace their age and the gifts of aging instead of fearing it and disdaining it. To let them know that, yes, there's insignificance that happens when you age, but it's not about you. What becomes insignificant is the trappings of your life. And what becomes more important are the priorities, the reflective state that older age brings you, the contemplative state that older age brings you, that allows you to be a light to those younger women who stand behind you. So, you know, there's a long line of women behind all of us, our ancestors, mm-hmm. and then also those younger women that are coming into their own maturity and their own fullness of life.
I love that you're talking about insignificant things, which is the trapping. And I like that word trapping, because oftentimes women, we do get stuck. There's so much noise and chatter, whether it's our own noise and chatter within our head, things that people have said to us or things that, you know, we've adopted ourselves, as well as the noise externally that can be in the workplace, that can be something that, you know, maybe we're listening to on social or on the television, our community that we live in. And then, yes, there's a younger generation that's looking at us to say, well, what path are you going to pave for me? Where are you going to part the weeds and the trees, if you will? And how am I going to then walk? Do I create a new path? Can I expand on the path? And then we look at our ancestors. I'm second generation here to the United States. My ancestors came from Greece. And I think about my yaya, my grandmother, and the things that she endured, as well as my other grandmother, and the things that she endured being a single parent at a time where, you know, that was actually forbidden. So how, you know, let's talk about your other book and share with our audience, what does it mean to, what does this word creatrix mean?
Oh, I love the word creatrix. It comes from the three Greek fates. There was a spinner, a weaver, and a cutter. And the weaver was called the creatrix. The word literally means a woman who makes things. So a couple of years ago, I was dogged by this idea. If you've ever had that experience where you get an idea and it just won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
That somehow this old paradigm of maiden, mother, crone wasn't quite accurate. First of all, maiden is just an antiquated word. I hope that some young woman one day will rewrite the maiden mythology, that we get something besides some nymph skipping through the forest barefoot. And that motherhood has been either so exalted or so disregarded that motherhood today doesn't resemble anything like what our grandparents' motherhood was or even our parents' motherhood was. And most women today that have kids are also, you know, pursuing a career or they're pursuing work of some sort because it takes two incomes to make a family work. But then that last word, crone, really rankled me. I am a word nerd. I think that words matter. I trace the etymology of the word crone, and it means disagreeable old woman. And it entered the lexicon around the 1300s, and it was meant as an insult. So I thought, well, what replaces crone? Because that's kind of like the third act of a woman's life. And if you'll notice in the culture, women often after 45 or 50, right around the onset of menopause, do begin to feel like they're insignificant. So what do we replace crone with? And creatrix was the word that came up, because we are women who make things. And as if to validate that idea, in 2017, more women over the age of 50 ran for local, state, and national political office than ever before in the country. So we are now experiencing this sort of new archetype that we can grow into. And that is the creatrix, a woman who makes things.
What do you think it takes for a woman to have that awareness moment? And why I'm asking this question is because I appreciate the data point about women. And we also know the other thing about women too, is that there's more and more women entrepreneurs. So more businesses that are female created, as well as, you know, over 50% majority stakeholders are, you know, women, and the increase of women on boards and running their own businesses. So have you seen any like tipping point? Is it and the tipping point that a woman says, you know what, I've had enough? I mean, look at the great resignation, right? There's so many people that have said, I've had enough, enough is enough. And they're being very selective on what their next steps are. So what's the tipping point for women to actually say, okay, I'm at this place and now I am a creatrix?
I think that it, rather than there being a tipping point, I think that it's a slow creep into our consciousness. And I think it begins with voice, learning that you have a voice and how to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Confidence is something that needs to be developed over time. And I don't know that we ever stop developing it.
Mm-hmm.
And confidence is different than than ego and blustering. And sometimes what gets modeled for us is this ego and this blustering, and I'm only going to have a positive attitude and I'm going to manifest this and that. And really, confidence is something more than that. It's some kind of combination of courage and the ability to fail without realizing that failure is not the end. So I think that those things, voice, confidence, courage, and then I think that with women, you have to be able to have a peace in your heart that says, I really am enough.
Yes.
I really am enough. And that in itself is empowering. I think that word empowering is sometimes overused. It's overblown. What does that really mean? But I think it's that place. And I do believe that peace in the heart is a tipping point when you're just able to go, you know what? I am enough. And I'm never going to be perfect. And that's okay, because honestly, nobody ever is.
That is so powerful when a person and a woman can look at herself in the mirror and have that clarity moment of, you know what? I am enough. I am more than enough. Yeah. And they hold their own. I love the analogy too. There's an analogy about, you know, we women, we walk with our crown on our head, right? And we're our own queen. And then when we see another queen and she feels a little run down and maybe she doesn't feel like she belongs and she's questioning her belonging, she's questioning herself, she's questioning her confidence. And another sister can come along and say, hey, queen, remember who you are, adjust your crown. It's so different when we have that community. And so I want to ask you about belonging. How do we feel like we belong? Because belonging is really a feeling. It isn't like, oh, I go home. You can have a house, but is it a home? You can be part of a group, but do you feel like you belong? So how do we develop that sense of belonging?
Boy, and I'm not sure that I have a solid answer to that, but I do note that we are in a belonging crisis in this country right now. Mm-hmm. That there are many more people than we realize who feel lonely, who feel like they don't fit in, who aren't quite sure about if they belong or to what they belong. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you choose? Do you choose to what you belong, or do you just come into the world belonging to something? Mm-hmm. And I think that what belonging asks of us is to get deeply into what our heart's desire is. What is your heart's desire? Because within that are the clues to your belonging. I'm part of a wonderful writing community that is mostly virtual as the result of the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I've launched 2 books now in the world and haven't set foot in a bookstore because of COVID. But I have this wonderful online community that I do feel like I belong to. And one of the things that helps me belong is when somebody shares their vulnerability with me, then I feel like I can share my vulnerability with them. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we're connected in a way and place that doesn't ask that we have the right filter on our Instagram account.
Right.
Our thighs are the right size or any of the things that, you know, we tell ourselves we need to have in order to be okay. But vulnerability is an amazing, amazing connector. And I think that that's where belonging begins. And maybe in this culture right now, we feel that if you're vulnerable, well, that's not strong. And to not be strong means you're a loser. And, you know, we get mixed up in all of these labels. We can tangle ourselves up. And I think belonging is as simple as, you know, as I'm talking to you about this now, I'm thinking, well, isn't it just about connecting? And isn't that what love is really about? I mean, what are you after when you're wanting love? You're wanting to connect in some way with another human being that says, I know you. I know you strive to be a good person. I know that you hurt inside sometimes. Me too.
Yeah.
A different kind of hashtag me too, I guess, that will allow this blossoming of belonging to happen in our culture.
And with belonging, there's a movement of inclusivity also.
Oh, huge. Because I mean, who wants to be left out? You know, that starts from the time that we're on the playground when we're 4 years, you know, 4 years old or 14 years old. You want to belong to a group. You want your tribe. And so, Yeah, inclusiveness is a big one. And we're getting some big lessons in inclusiveness right now. That's going on too. Mm-hmm. Everything's kind of this muddle of chaos in our world. And there's really bad parts to that, but there's also really good parts to that. And I think the silver lining in that is this younger generation that's coming up, you know, coming of age into adulthood right now, is probably the most inclusive generation that I've seen in my lifetime. You know, they just don't question. They just kind of like take people at face value and, hey, I dig you the way you are.
They are very inclusive.
Yep.
They're definitely very inclusive. And it's refreshing, especially when we have other generations that have, you know, battle scars, wounds, and I don't want to quote Pat Benatar here, but another notch on my lipstick case, right? Because that's the generation I'm from. And I say that because one of my kids is, she's 18 and 4'11", and she's just, she holds her own, you know, and we have conversations and she'll shake her head sometimes and say to me, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you tolerated it. I don't know how you did it. I don't know. And I said to her, well, now you understand, you know, some of the journeys that I've experienced in school and with protesting for equality and basic things. With the silver lining, you know, even though the world's in chaos right now, and I don't mean to diminish our current situation there, when the dust settles, you know, you can't see the lining always when there's so much muck and, like, you know, fog and dust and everything. But once that settles, then we have a different level of awareness. And I'm curious to know your thoughts about the patterns of generations and how this relates to the experiences, the things that maybe we envision in the future, for how it relates to women inclusivity with all generations, where we embrace our ancestors, we embrace the historical stories, say, of, you know, Susan B. Anthony and some of the other women who have paved the way for us, as well as the younger generations that we're hearing their voices, we're walking together. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. Thank you so much for being here with us today. And I hope that you're truly enjoying today's podcast episode. If you'd like more information about what PTSD and Beyond is, what we do, the services that we provide, our workshops, our training, our keynotes, and our coaching, drop us a line at hello@ptsdandbeyond.org. All right, let's continue on with today's episode.
Boy, there's so much to unpack in that question. I almost don't know where to begin, but let me start with the generational piece, because I do think that's an important piece. And I think that every generation has its strong suit and also its weakness. And that's true of every individual as well. So it would stand to be so. Sometimes when you're younger, you don't see that it takes millions and millions of tiny little steps made by millions and millions of people in order to really create change. So when I was a young woman in my 20s, I looked at my mom and I thought, God, she's just kind of clueless. As I got to be 35 and was paying a mortgage and, you know, trying to work a job, she changed before my eyes. And I realize now, in spite of some of the things that she believed that I felt were antiquated, that she still paved a way and paid a price. I have a story about my mom where she was a single mom. It was just the two of us growing up together. And she came home from work one day and said that she had quit her job. Why did you quit her job? You know, 10, 11 years old, I knew that this was disastrous. And she said, well, you know, that assistant they got me, the man that they hired as my assistant, I found out he was making more money than me. And I said, well, how is that fair? You've been at the company for a long time. Mm-hmm. He just got there. And she said, yes, that's what I told my boss. And I said, well, what did the boss say? Well, the boss said, well, you know, Cleo, he has a family to support. And my mom said, and so do I. And of course, it was a time when single women weren't raising families. Mm-hmm. It was a time before the Lilly Ledbetter Act. It was the only course of action that she had was to quit, just to stand on principle. Now, we were fine. She went on to another job, but I never forgot that story because, you know, as the years went on, I didn't really think much about it. It seems like such a little thing. You know, she didn't like her job, so she quit. Mm. But that took tremendous amount of courage in her day and age to do that, and tremendous courage to do when she had a daughter at home.
Yep.
Support as well. So generationally, we must recognize that every generation paves a way and pays a price, just as the upcoming generation of young people will also pave a way and pay a price. And that's how we get stronger. We grow individually as women, but we also grow collectively. And it's really time for us to start acknowledging the collective, what your ancestors have done for you, what the women, the generation that came before you, what they have done for you. And vice versa, that the older generation recognizes, it's like, oh my gosh, this younger generation is so talented. They give me hope for our future.
You know, one of the things that I hear you saying is a deeper level of appreciation. And thank you for sharing the story about your mom. I can remember, actually, you know, one of the things that's coming to my mind is, Stephanie, I have my grandmother's workbook. She worked for the National Bank of Detroit. And I have her workbook with her notes, her managerial notes. And I should pull some of these out because there are some things in there that are about the unfairness that women have had to, and the things that women have had to endure in the workplace. And this is in the 1960s and 70s.
Right.
So applaud to your mom and applaud to you. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's so empowering when we share those stories, because as women, when we do hear those stories, it helps us with the things that we are experiencing, because too often we think that we are alone. I'm the only one who feels this way. There can't be anybody else who feels this way. And then it creates that cycle of isolation and loneliness that you were talking about earlier. When we do share these stories, then what happens is we build that connection of, one, I'm not alone. Secondly, oh my gosh, somebody else is experiencing this too. And then three, it is that energy that's exchanged that is empowering. And it's not a foo-foo, woo-woo. It literally is. If you've ever gotten to a room with women, whether it's via Zoom or some other, you know, virtual technology, or, you know, we're together, there is so much energy that is strong, that is clear, that it is connecting, that it is unifying. And I'm pausing because I can think of a situation. I felt so amazing. And to be able to have that sense really takes Maslow's hierarchy of needs to a different level. And I wonder what would happen if Maslow was a woman. You know, how different would that pyramid look? What other things would be included in there? Maybe there's a person who's a researcher out there that wants to take, you know, adapt Maslow's hierarchy of needs and create it from a woman's perspective. Historically, how do we then continue the momentum of this connecting of women as well as embracing the female spirit?
I think that we have to be responsible for ourselves to live somewhat of an examined life, a thoughtful life, individually, before the collective. And then we owe it to the collective to uplift other women. I'm surprised. Every now and then I give a presentation and I ask the question, I tell the story about my mom, and I ask the question, what have you experienced in the workplace? And 9 times out of 10, what women will tell me, competition from other women is vicious.
Yeah, it is.
And so, and that kind of surprised me, because it's like we worked so hard to gain like equal footing with men in the workplace, and now we're dealing with equal footing of women. So does your life have a mission statement as a woman? because my mission statement is I want to lift other women up. I want to be a light to the world. I want to be a force for good. And when you start affirming those things for yourself, you are those things for other people. Don't be shy. Use your voice. But know what your mission in life is, what your purposefulness is.
I love that. I love that. I want to uplift other women. I want to share an example here of a situation that recently occurred. I gave a woman in a workplace a compliment. I liked her necklace. It reminded me of citrine. It was yellow. It was a really dreary day in Minnesota. If you believe it or not, we still are getting snow. Oh. So, and this woman had, she had a yellow, beautiful sweater on. And I said, you know, I really love the color yellow. You look really nice today. And she's like, oh, this, I got this at a consignment store. And I said to her, okay, let's pause for a second. We're in the hallway. And I said, women, we have a tendency to do this, right? Oh, I like your hair. Oh, this, I just, you know, I wasn't doing too much. I got to get a haircut, that kind of thing. And I said to her, how about we rephrase this? Let's rephrase it and reframe it. And I said to her, so what is it about your outfit that's, you know, is it the outfit that's uncomfortable or is it me complimenting, receiving a compliment? What is it? Because there's something that's not resonating in the way that to accept a gift and say, oh, well, thank you. And, you know, she shared about how she shops consignment. And I said, oh, so, you know, you care about the environment then, right? And she's looking at me, you know, smiling. And I said, again, reframing it, you know, you shop consignment. So you care about the environment. And come to find out, she's a runner. She's really, you know, an activist on environmental causes. So I said, I think that's great. It's wonderful. So let's redo this again. I really like your outfit. You look really nice today. Oh, thank you so much. And she did. She went off on this whole thing about how the color yellow makes her really happy. And it is a dreary day. And she's picked it out specifically because it's so dreary and the color makes her happy. And she's hoping that it'll make other people happy. It was so wonderful. And at the same time of having that conversation with her, Stephanie, there were two other women that were watching this that made snide comments afterward.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, why would you do that? Why would you behave in that way to notice that this exchange happened? And on the other level, as women and leaders, we're all leaders, to your point about wanting to uplift other women, we have opportunities every day where we can do these little micro sister connections, if you want to call it. I can give you another example. A gal at the gym is in high school and somebody didn't wipe their machine down. And I said, you know, how are you going to address that? And she said, they're not going to listen to me. I'm just a high schooler. And I was like, wait a second. I told her, I said, you know what? It doesn't matter how old you are. I said, you are a woman. And I said, it doesn't matter how old you are, how old that person is. If this is what you're believing in, then you hold it, you own it. And I said, even if your voice shakes, doesn't matter. I said, the first time you're going to do it, I said, your voice is going to shake. Second time, maybe not so much. I said, but the third time, if you really believe in it, hey, we want to keep our gym clean. Could you remember to wipe the machine down and then hand them the freaking towel, right? Here's the towel. I got one for you. And I'll make it easy for you. So anyway, so now when I already see this young lady, she always tells me about a little thing that she's done. And they are micro steps, like you mentioned earlier about micro steps. It's a micro step for her. Again, we have the opportunity to do that for others, as well as you mentioned to also Stephanie about we need to examine our own life first. So as I might give examples on ways that I've done this for other folks to help the reframe and to uplift others, I've also done that for myself because I often live by the motto of, you know, if you don't do it for yourself, how can you do it for others? Just like if you can't make a promise to yourself, how can you make a promise to others? And that's part of my promise keeping. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And it brings me to my next question. What are some additional ways that we as women can honor our ancestors as well as help other women who are behind us and continue to help ourselves?
Well, I'm going to give you an idea for a little guided imagery.
Oh, perfect.
And this is something that I learned from the writer Joan Borisenko. And I did a workshop with her probably 25, 30 years ago now. But you Stand in the center of a room, face a window so you can face light if possible. Close your eyes so that what you see is just that kind of golden light behind your eyes. And now imagine your mother standing behind you and just kind of feel what that's like. Imagine standing behind her is her mother. And imagine standing behind what would be your grandmother now is your great-grandmother. And pretty soon the faces begin to blur. There's faces that you don't know. There's names that you don't know. But all of these women paved a way and paid a price. And if you take just a moment to breathe in, thank you. The only reason that you're here today with whatever sense of courage or confidence or independence that you have is because of those women who stand behind you. Now, on the other side of that is if you can imagine yourself standing and behind you are a group of young women, the upcoming generation, all the way back to like 15-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds. In my case, I can say 65-year-olds. And you're holding a light. You're holding a torch. You have been lighting the way. But at a certain point, I'm going to get too old to hold the torch. I am going to recede from life and go out onto the horizon where eternity lingers. So I want to turn around and imagine myself passing that light to the woman who is standing behind me and say, I honor you and I know that you will do an even better job than I've done. Don't pass the light too soon, but don't wait too long either. So those are two little guided imagery kinds of things that you can just work with your mind, make up something that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, thinking positive thoughts is like, it's like a positive prayer, regardless of what your beliefs are. It's just like putting something positive out there and expecting something positive in return. And so think about what you do for yourself and what you do for other women. And think about what all those women that are your ancestors did for you. I think about my great-grandmother coming across the ocean on a boat. And then she somehow made it from like somewhere in Canada because Ellis Island wasn't born, you know, hadn't happened yet. And she makes it to Colorado. Like what? In a covered wagon? How many people didn't survive that trip?
Right.
And what did it take to survive that trip? And then like build a house out of what? Just the stuff that's around. It's not like you can run to Pottery Barn and fill your house with furniture.
Right.
So honor. Wow.
Very empowering, very empowering. We can even have an adaptation too for folks that our community, some of our community doesn't have the relationship as estranged with biological parents. We can substitute biological mother for a mother figure, a Absolutely. Person who was an aunt or even a person in our community who was that maternal role. Those are two beautiful guided imagery exercises. Stephanie, before we conclude for today, we've got a few more minutes. Any last thoughts on some things that you'd like to share with our audience today? And thank you so much for being here. Thank you again so much, the 96 countries and the amazing people that show up every week to listen to our podcast. Thank you so much.
Oh boy, what a great conversation with you. I could talk to you all day. It's going to be hard to unplug and go about my day now. But I guess the thing I would want to add is in that those last couple of exercises is that, you know, if you don't have a great relationship with your mother, certainly you can substitute a goddess figure. You know, the Greeks were great on archetypes. And I believe you can call in all of those kinds of energies. The other thing about mothers that I'll say, and I did not have the best relationship with my own mom, is that it surprised me when she passed that our relationship continued. And many of the conversations that I was unable to have with her when she was alive, I was able to have with her in death.
Oh.
And now there is a peacefulness in my heart about, I just got the lessons that I needed in my life. And she was a part of that. So I'm able to honor her in a way, in her death, in a way that I wasn't able to in her life. And so I think that's an important piece to remember too. Oftentimes our biological parents, I think they're just there to to provide for us the foundation that we need to grow psychologically and spiritually. And sometimes it's not the best relationship. Sometimes the toughest lessons come from a bad relationship, but they're the biggest lessons.
Right. So. That's so true. Grow spiritually and psychologically. Stephanie, thank you so much for being on today's show. Guys, everybody, Stephanie's information is going to be in the summary bio. Make sure that you connect with her and connect with her on her social. Give her a shout out on an email. And if you do connect with her, please let her know that you heard her on PTSD and Beyond. Stephanie, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond. Remember, everything drops on Thursday, as is if you subscribe. So if you don't subscribe, there's a bonus of subscribing because you get everything a day early. And also, please check us out on our Patreon, our Ko-Fi. You know that I like coffee. We got to somehow be able to manage our op costs, and that is one way of doing so. And we have many different tier levels with some hopefully gifts that you think are super cool and awesome. We've got some other things coming up on the pipeline too, and we'll make announcements when those things come out to be released. Otherwise, we'll see each other again next week. So you guys make it a good one, eh?